They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It is 9:14, Wednesday, February 16th. This is the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And in my life, I aspire to do all things like Bill Finley. And now I have a second show to plug, just like Bill. It's called Better Things with Joe Bianca. The first episode is out now with David Aragona. Check it out.
Look forward to seeing that, Joe. And, you know, I was thinking over the last couple of days, so we've got a 15-year-old figure skater who tested positive for performance-enhancing drugs. And, oh, yeah, but no problem. She can still compete in the Olympics. We thought our sport was screwed up.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And Joe, congratulations on the new podcast. It was actually very well done. I watched the initial one, one of almost, you know, tens of thousands that look like that, that are watching it. And in honor of that, I would like to announce for the first time that I also will have a new spinoff podcast. It's called Fawner and Glory, and it stars me and Sam Elliott as the crusty trainer and Jimmy Lynn Spears as the plucky young jockey. And we go to Nebraska in search of the next great graded stake horse. Fawner and Glory, and coming soon.
Let us not forget Saturday opening day at Fawner Park.
That's why it's such a great tie-in, Bill Finley. You are a marketing genius.
Yes, there you go.
Have you optioned the movie rights yet, John? Because that sounds...
Not yet. I'm still in negotiations. Still in negotiations. I'm still waiting to see who plays me in the movie.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The Keeneland Spring Meet returns April 8th through the 29th. New Keeneland Select accounts that wager $300 in the first 30 days or earn $100 back with their sign-up bonus. Visit KeenelandSelect.com to sign up. Just wanted to touch on a few races from this past weekend before we get to some news coming out of the Kentucky legislature. Basically, the main action was at Tampa Bay Downs with the Sam F. Davis, grade three for three-year-olds, and the Suncoast Stakes for three-year-old fillies. John was in that race. I thought Nest was pretty impressive. She didn't get a big buyer figure. It was only an 82, but I thought just visually she did that really impressively. She was 1-5, so she was supposed to win that race, but really kind of just pulled away from that field on her own. But the Sam Davis, I thought Classic Causeway was very, very good looking in that race. We talked to Brian Lynch yesterday. We're going to play that interview a little bit later. He's obviously a super nice guy and a good trainer. And I thought that horse was way over bet going into the race. I thought 8-5 in a deep field like that was a terrible, terrible value. But he proved me wrong because he took heat every step of the way, pulled away in the stretch, ran his last 16th and under 6 seconds. And to me, looks like a real top contender for the Derby. Only got an 88 buyer figure. But, you know, it's one of those things where the circumstances were such that he was never going to get a huge figure with the way he was getting hounded on the lead the whole time. So I thought he ran as well as he possibly could have, considering that circumstance. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, normally the Sam F. Davis, you know, is it really that important? History of it, I believe no horse has ever come out of the race to have won the Kentucky Derby. But this horse actually could. I mean, he's the real deal. And I agree with you, Joe, about everything you said about, you know, his performance. And the other thing that pops off the page to me, and I'm sure this will come up when we do our draft later on, the, you know, you look from the races from last year, the two-year-old races, and the Kentucky Jockey Club looks huge at this point. White of Berrio finished third, came back and won the Holy Bull. Classic Causeway was second, came back, of course, and won the Sam F. Davis. And now Smile Happy goes this Saturday in the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. If he wins it, I mean, we're going to have to look at this race as, you know, much more important even than the Breeders' Cup, where, you know, nothing really has come out of there to really pique our interest. And I think, again, this is another thing. Was anybody going to take Corniche in the draft? He hasn't worked. He's seems to be, you know, missing in action here. So, you know, that was the story. You're right about Nest. I mean, Todd Pletcher picked an easy spot to kick off her three-year-old campaign. She was 1-5. She did what she's supposed to do. I believe she's going to the Ashland next. And yeah, she's definitely up there in the top three or four for the Kentucky Oaks. But a relatively quiet weekend with just the Sam F. Davis. We move on. And I really look forward to the Risen Star. That looks like a very deep race.
And that's an excellent segue for me, Bill, because I was talking to some people, you know, over the past couple of days, and I don't remember in recent history having a really chock full of top candidates in two races this early. You know, the Davis, you know, as you guys mentioned, Classic Causeway looked great in it, and Chipsational, Volcanic, Marcassi had like three horses in the race. there are going to be some horses coming out of the Sam Davis that are going to show up the first Saturday in May in Churchill Downs. And then you look forward to this weekend, the Risen Star. And you know, we've all done our homework for the handicapping contest or the Derby contest. I saw like four or five horses that are draftable, you know, in our contest that are running in the Risen Star. And I just don't remember, you know, I know there've always been really good preps out of fairgrounds, but I don't remember it being this early, like in the Risen Star. Usually it was Louisiana Derby where you got, you know, three, four, five horses that you thought were going to be Derby contenders. And you guys have talked a little bit about Classic Causeway. The thing that impressed me the most with his win in the Davis was that, you know, typical Paco Lopez on the outside horse, the only horse with speed, Little Vic, tried to pin Classic Causeway to the rail. And Classic Causeway just kind of like looked over and was like, see ya. And basically went gate to wire. And after like six furlongs, just started to pull away from the rest of the field. Interestingly enough, you know, I read Ortiz, who rode Classic Causeway, I think did a really phenomenal job in getting to the front and then slowing down the pace. He went 22-3. 46-3. So that quarter, second quarter was 24. And then he went 25 seconds and 25-2, you know, for the last, you know, two furlongs and half mile respectively. So it really looked like that he was pulling away from the rest of the field. And obviously that track was very tiring, which leads you to believe that the mile and 16th that Classic Causeway just ran is just kind of a warm up. He probably ran the equivalent of like a 9-furlong race on other faster racetracks.
Interesting thing about the Causeway is, you know, he's one of the last three horses from the last crop of Giants Causeway. So that, you know, he's really carrying on that legacy. It was a great story last year, the TDN by Chris McGrath called They Might Be Giants, about like the last couple of Giants Causeway progeny. So that's super interesting. We did talk to Brian Lynch about that. And, you know, he's one of those horses that seems to be able to carry his speed. You know, he did rate a little bit in the Kentucky Jockey Club. I agree with Bill about that race, about what a live race it looks like. And, yeah, we're going to do the fantasy draft in a little bit. And, you know, we're doing it a little bit earlier than we used to. We used to do it the week of the Fountain of Youth. It's going to be tough because there's a lot of really nice three-year-olds and we're pretty far out from the Derby. So it's going to be tough to figure out who to take this early on, but I'm looking forward to it. Just wanted to touch on this real quick. This was news that came out on Monday night. The Kentucky Speaker of the House of Representatives co-filed a bill to try to get around the 140 mare cap that the Jockey Club was instituting for stallions that were born from 2020 onward. This was obviously a major bone of contention in the industry and something that obviously the big stallion farms were very strongly, steadfastly against. It looks like it's got the backing of the entire, most of the Kentucky legislature. There's still a couple of steps it needs to go through. Supposedly it's already going to the agricultural committee in the Kentucky legislature. So it seems like this is something that's going to pass. There's more developments to come. I'm assuming that the Jockey Club is going to sue to try to reverse that. So look forward to more discussion of lawsuits on the Writers' Room. I know that's everybody's favorite part of the show, but just some initial thoughts from you guys about what this means.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd add to that, Joe, let's have another contest. Pick the over-under on when, or no, I'll put it this way. What will happen first? There'll be a decision for the 2021 Kentucky Derby, or we'll actually know whether or not the Jockey Club can have this cap. And I set the over-under for both at January 1, 2026. How about that?
I'll take the under slightly. Strongly about it. I'll take it under slightly, though.
It sounds like that'll be like our 500th show. In our 500th show, we'll be talking about that. You know, look, I'm a free enterprise guy, so I you know, applaud the fact that hopefully this cap is going to be blown off the, you know, off the face of the earth. Because quite frankly, I really don't believe that that's the way that it should be done. And I know there's all kinds of arguments from the geneticists and from breeders about, oh, this is, you know, we're going down a bad path because we're continuing to tighten up the gene pool. Well, if that's the case, then incentivize other gene pools to come in, because there's a whole nother continent of stallions that are overseas, for example, that you know, unless you go five generations back, aren't really as closely inbred to our horses here. So there are other ways to get around the gene pool shrinking argument. That being said, you know, I love the free enterprise system. That's where I would go with. I'm going to argue against myself on this one a little bit, because I do think that in our industry, we need to have some kind of centralized governing body. And maybe it's not the jockey club, but there's got to be something. We rail on this all the time about how there's so many different rules and so many different fiefdoms. And that's you know, kind of the problem with our industry. And this is just kind of another example of another split in the industry. But that being said, I really feel like that if a stallion is good and people want to plunk money down to breed their 200th mare to them or 250 mares to them, then they should be allowed to do it. We really shouldn't have an artificial cap on our industry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel strongly enough about it one way or the other. But I just wanted to note that, like John is saying, this is basically going to try to circumvent the Jockey Club as the national registrar for all of the foals that are born. I'm just going to quote from TD's story here. In addition, the measure would empower the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, and God knows nothing goes wrong when they're in power, to, quote, select and utilize an entity to serve as the registrar, meaning that the state selection might not necessarily end up being the 128-year-old industry standard Jockey Club. Yet, if the chosen registrar does end up being the Jockey Club and that organization does not, quote, submit to the jurisdiction of Kentucky and, quote, comply with the laws of this chapter, the bill summary states that Kentucky will amend state statutes to instead, quote, allow the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund registrar to stamp a thoroughbred certificate with the registrar's seal. So basically they're saying, you know, the Jockey Club, which has controlled and certified all of the foals in America for all these years, would no longer be in charge of the Kentucky foal registration, which would lead to an interesting kind of back and forth with the Jockey Club over time about who's actually registered where, who can run where. And it's going to be a lot of mess from this fallout. But, you know, this is like the major pushback that we've been expecting, the legislative pushback to the 140 mayor cap rule. So we'll keep you posted on that as more developments warrant. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. The Keeneland September yearling sale produced its fourth consecutive horse of the year last week with Nick's Go, also earned champion older dirt male honors. Four other Keeneland sales graduates won Eclipse Awards: Corniche, Echo Zulu, Jackie's Warrior, and Malathon. Congrats to all the connections. Also, a reminder that the Keeneland Spring Meet tickets are on sale right now. You can purchase those online at tickets.keeneland.com. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
He was just put together like a machine, and he had a great mind. Everything about him was what you'd want.
Tis the Law pops the cork in the champagne. Tis the Law is going to win the first leg of the Triple Crown.
I've never seen him get tired.
Respect the law. Tis the Law.
His structure is just perfect. His bone is perfect.
He's left the others behind. He's going to win the Run Happy Travers.
He's everything you would look for in a horse.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Munnings added a new TDN Rising Star to his record with Zozos, who won impressively at Oaklawn on Friday by over 10 lengths for Brad Cox. Munnings now has two TDN Rising Stars already this year, 9 overall. Practical Joke, who we're all looking forward to this year, had an exciting double on Friday when he had Klugman win a maiden special weight at Gulfstream by open lengths. And then Lightning Struck won an allowance for Steve Asmussen. Then on Saturday, he had another winner, Money Supply, break his maiden at Tampa Bay for Chad Brown, Klarovich Stable. Practical Joke stands for $35,000 this year at Ashford Stud, slated to have a very, very big year with his second crop of horses. So it's the moment you've all been waiting for. We are here for the TDN three-year-old fantasy draft, the 2022 edition. And as part of it, we'd like to welcome back to the program managing editor at the TDN and undefeated basketball coach, Alan Carrazzo. Thanks for coming on, Al.
Hey, guys. Good to see you.
Great to have you back. All right. So we're just to run down the rules real quick. We got five horses each, 20 horses total. The rules are you have to pick one horse that has 0 points currently on the Kentucky Derby points leaderboard. We'll throw up the schedule for all the races and what the points are going forward. Obviously, the Kentucky Derby is going to be the biggest points race. The wrinkle this year is the Bob Baffert thing. We're going to pick Baffert horses and we're going to accrue points for them. The caveat is whether or not they're going to run in the Kentucky Derby. So it's a gamble. You can take the top Bob Baffert horses and accrue points all along the way. But then if they don't run in the Derby, you run the risk of being blanked in the Derby. So the first pick is going to go to my friend Jonathan Green, and then Bill's going to go, and then me, and then Al, and then we'll snake back and forth. So five rounds. John, take it away.
You know, and because of that wrinkle, Joe, I really had a quandary. I had a dilemma of deciding, you know, am I going to pick who I think is the best horse, the best three-year-old of the group, knowing that he may not even make it to the Derby and accrue points in that all-important race? Or do I go with somebody else that I feel like is, you know, has talent and could work its way up into the Derby? And I went with the latter group. I went with a horse that is not trained by Bob Baffert, but one that I was visually impressed with. Pedigree-wise, I'm super impressed with. I think he can definitely go the mile and a quarter without an issue. And I'm going to knock out a couple of criteria because he also right now has 0 points. So this is my 0 point horse, my top pick. And depending on what racetrack you've seen him run, he's either named Emmanuel or Emmanuel, depending on if you heard the track announcer from Gulfstream or Tampa. But he's 2 for 2, really impressive with the eye test, impressive bred. I think he's yet to been tested. He's one going two turns. He's, you know, still improving. He broke his maiden first time out of Gulfstream from the one hole and just, you know, went around that one turn mile like it was nobody's business. And then he just took off from the rest of the field at Tampa Bay. And we were in that race, which is why I was so impressed with it. But I'm going to go with my number one pick this year, Emmanuel.
All right. John picks Emmanuel number one. And just to remind John, we're doing 20 picks. So 2 minutes per pick. We're going to be here all day. Bill?
That was it. He's the top pick. He deserves to have that kind of evidence. All the other ones I'm going to go. I'm just going to say for my last pick is Frosty Storm and then be done. Okay?
All right, Bill.
All right, just to get us back on track after John's 14-minute diatribe there, Bob Baffert's horses are going to be able to compete in the Kentucky Derby. I have no doubt about it. Messier is the best horse in the country. I take him.
All right. Those are probably too short. Can we try to middle there, guys? It's been a while. So, Bill's very confident that Baffert's horses are going to be in the Derby. All right. Maybe he knows something we don't know.
Well, actually, not that it matters, but I actually agree with you that Messier is probably the top three-year-old in the country right now. Nothing that matters.
Okay. So, you know, we talked about the Kentucky Jockey Club earlier and what a live race that was. So he hasn't run yet as a three-year-old. Let me just make sure he has some workouts before I pick this horse. But I like Smile Happy. You know, he's a TDN Rising Star. He's undefeated. He's done nothing wrong for Ken McDeek. All right. He has been working.
he's going to run in the Risen Star.
Okay, just double checking there. So I'm going to take Smile Happy, number three. Al?
Those are some bold picks, gentlemen. For John, especially, man, and you've taken my 0 point source. So thanks for that. Okay. What kind of welcome back is that?
Well, that's why you get the fourth pick because you're low man in the totem pole. Out.
Well, now you got two picks.
Four.
Now you got two.
Four
picks.
And five. So, my number one was Smile Happy Joe. So, good luck with that. I have number two. We're going to oppose each other on Saturday, and I have I've gone for Zanin number two, so I'll use him for my fourth pick. Really impressed with his Remsen, covered 46 more feet than Mo Donegal, and looks like he's ready to stay. And he's a perfect prototypical Airdrie horse, by an Airdrie sire, out of a broodmare by an Airdrie sire, a deep Brett and Jones family, should stay the trips. I like him going forward, so I'll use him number four. And for number five, another horse that hasn't yet started, another from the Ken McPeak barn, I'll go Rattle and Roll with number five.
All right. Definitely a nice horse. Has looked great in the Breeders' Futurity. For my next pick, you know, this is kind of bad timing since he just picked up points over the weekend. But I got to go with Classic Causeway. I just was so impressed by him in the Sam Davis. Maybe he'll only run once more before the Derby, but you know, I just think, you know, Giants Causeway is going to go a mile and a quarter. I think he can rate a little bit. So I still think it's good value in the second round. I'll take Classic Causeway.
I'm worried about the picking up a 0 point horse, especially with something coming off the board. I normally wouldn't pick this horse in this spot, but I don't want to let somebody else have them. And I'm 99% sure that Forbidden Kingdom doesn't have any points. If he does, somebody please correct me quickly, because the San Vicente is not a point race, but a good horse in the hands of Richard Mandela, a lot of quality. I'll take Forbidden Kingdom.
Not bad.
Interesting. Interesting pick. Okay. That brings me to great. All right. I actually had this horse as my third best horse, Mo Donegal. Mo Donegal.
Yeah. Ran great in the Holyville, I thought, considering the pace.
Yeah. It was sneaky. It was sneaky. I think he's going to get better with distance as the races develop and go further. Let's see. Crud. You guys picked all my other top horses. I'm going to go with another newbie of Todd Pletcher's, a horse that doesn't have any points as well, was an impressive maiden special weight winner recently, and that's Charge It. Charge It from the Pletcher barn.
All right, Bill, it's on you.
I'm going to tap it.
You guys, man, you're giving me all these Baffert horses. I'm not saying Bob Baffert is going to be able to run in the Kentucky Derby, but they're just going to wind up running for Todd Pletcher or somebody else. It's Baffert may be banned, but I can't see these horses, these owners, not finding their way into the Kentucky Derby. If I'm wrong, I'm going to be, you know, get beat 100 lengths in this contest. So I'll take Newgrange.
Yeah, I mean, he's already pretty accomplished too. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't know. There's a couple I'm going back and forth between. I thought about Galt, but I wish he would have run a little bit better in the Holy Bowl. He was fourth in that race. Kind of like White Abario. I'm looking at one other horse right now. All right, I'm going to go. There's a Kelly Breen horse. I'm going to use this horse as my 0 points horse. As my third pick in due time. He's by Not This Time. He got a big figure in this, the Gulfstream allowance race that he won a couple weeks ago, or a week and a half ago. Kelly Breen, Edge Racing. I think he's on the come up. So I'll go with In Due Time.
Good pick, Joe. I like him a lot.
Thanks.
I'm between, I have very close decision between the next two horses. I'm going to give a slight edge and go with stick with the Holy Bull form and go to Simplification. Missed the break a little bit. I'm generally not a fan of need the lead types and horses that only have shown you one dimension. And it's quite possible that they learned something with this horse in the Holy Bull and that he'll actually sit off horses and make a run. He ran a pretty good race, all things considered, last time. So I'll go with Simplification for round three, and then I do with hesitation. I know he's better than the figure showed from the Withers, given the way that the track played and everything like that. He's much better than a 78 buyer horse, and that is Early Voting. I'll go with him for my fourth round.
Yeah, I totally agree with that assessment of him. I'm thankful he's still on the board. I'm going to take the Holy Bull winner. I'm going to take White Abario. I think he got a little bit lucky in that race with a couple other horses, had some tough trips, but still got a 97 fig. I think, you know, just at this point in the draft, I think he's established enough that I think he's a good value. So I'll take White Abario with my fourth pick.
Boy, Joe, I couldn't believe that horse was still out there. And I was like, please don't take him. Please don't take him. But good pick. I'm telling you right now, your stable looks very strong.
That's the kiss of death.
Yeah, but it does. I mean, geez. All right. And John, yeah, you're not. This isn't. You're not doing well. And
I'm not. Right. I think right now we're all even, Bill. We all have zero points.
Power rankings of the fantasy.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Stop stalling and pick the damn horse.
I'll take Epicenter.
Epicenter. All right.
Oh, that's a terrible pick. You're last. You're last already, Bill.
Mel Kiper. He's like, I grade their draft a D minus.
Exactly. Oh my God. All right. I can't believe this horse is still on the board. I was actually going to pick him with the third pick overall, with my third pick in the draft, and that's Slow Down Andy, the California bred Nyquist, who's going to be running in the Risen Star.
All right. Yeah. That.
All right. That, now, yeah. I'm going to go against the grain. And you guys gave me so much crap last year because I didn't pick my own horse, Helium, and he won the Tampa Bay Derby. And as it turned out, if I picked my own damn horse, I would have ended up, you know, at least in puncher's, contention going into the Kentucky Derby. So I'm going to throw a complete crapshoot long shot out there, and I'm going to pick my own horse, and that's Glider. Glider, who's going to be running in the Gotham on March the 5th, finished second to Emmanuel, who I picked top overall. And I'm going to go with my own horse. So my stable actually, I think, definitely has three horses that don't have any points. That's how excited I am about these.
Oh, boy. That could definitely work out. It is early, you know. He's a nice horse, John. The subplot here is John is mad at me because I didn't make him a rising star when he won at Gulfstream.
I'm mad at you for a lot of reasons, Joe. That's just one.
He won on the synthetic that nothing ever produced is produced from those synthetic races, at least not yet.
Were you going to pick Glider? Is that why you're stalling?
I'm going to try to pick Helium again. But
yeah, you can. He'll get just as many points as he did last year.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go back to like the two-year-olds, but I can't find any other like really nice two-year-olds because you guys picked Rattle and Roll. And actually, you know what? I gave this horse out on the other show the other day as my future wager bet. I think he's a little bit of a plotter, but I think he's bred to go long. He's got Todd Pletcher in his corner. I think he's going to jump up and run big in one of these preps. So I'm going to take Command Performance. You know, he's a maiden, so that's a little bit of a risk. He still hasn't broken his maiden. I think it's the kind of thing where if he doesn't run well in one of these preps, Todd Pletcher will be like off and say, let's just break his maiden and have a big summer with him. But I don't know. He ran really well in the Champagne. I thought he ran pretty well in the Juvenile as well to run fourth. So for my last pick, I'll go with Command Performance and be consistent.
Ha. Huh. Ha ha ha. You know what? I don't like the horse, but
that was a good start.
How much of T.D. Thornton, who we all have a tremendous respect for, had Copper Cap as his number one horse.
Right.
I think he only has him down at like number three after this. In a tip of a not tip of the cap to T.D., why don't I take Papa Cap? Another risen star horse.
I love when people say, I don't like this one, but I'm going to pick it anyway.
Man of War with your fifth pick. That's all.
Yeah. He's right. All right, bring us home, Al.
I haven't burned my 0 points horse yet. I'll go with the horse that I made a rising star last weekend for Brad Cox, the 3-0 colt Zozotes, who was extremely impressive, beat the snot out of Barossa, former Baffert, now with Rudy Brisset, and just did it so well. Just sat right off him and claimed him, and then kicked home like 6.03, I think, was his final 16th of a mile. So he was really running, got an 88 buyer for that. Brad Cox says he's going to give him a chance in a race like the Rebel or the Arkansas Derby or something like that. So he'll have a chance to earn his way in, and we'll throw all caution to the wind with Zozos.
All right. So that's five horses each for all four of us. So if you want to, let's just run it down for the audience and we'll throw up a graphic for all of our horses. John, let's hear your team.
Okay. This is in no particular, I'm going to do an alphabetical order because that's where I have it on my list. I have Charge It of Pletcher's. I have Emmanuel of Pletcher's. I have Glider of Cassie, Mo Donegal of Pletcher, and Slow Down Andy of O'Neill.
Bill?
Yeah, Messier for my friend Bob Baffert. Newgrange for my friend Bob Baffert. I don't know other Baffert horses were taken, were they?
I don't think so.
Did you see a trend?
Coronation was not taken at all.
No, nope. Best buddies. Forbidden Kingdom for Mandela, Epicenter, and Papa Cap, two horses that are running in the Risen Star.
All right, my team, you heard it from Bill first, the guaranteed lock to win this fantasy contest. Started with Smile Happy, and I've got Classic Causeway, In Due Time, White Obario, and my last pick, Command Performance. Al?
And I've got Zanin for Chad Brown, Rattle and Roll for Ken McPeak, Simplification, Antonio Sano, Early Voting Chad Brown, and Long Shot 0 points horse Zozos for Brad Cox and the Butzos.
Love it. A lot of good picks. Always fun doing this. So once again, we're going to go with the traditional Derby points breakdown. So all the Derby points that the connections would get for the horses will get for the contest. And then the Kentucky Derby is going to be the big points race, which I believe has 300 for the top prize. But we'll double check that. I feel like we should have known that before we came on the air. But nevertheless, we'll have it by the time that this goes up. So always a lot of fun. Al, thank you so much for coming on with
us. Thanks,
Al.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So,
all right. Always a good time. Continue with the undefeated season, buddy.
Yeah,
we're going to try.
So that was a lot of fun. Thanks to Al for coming on. But, you know, shortly after doing the draft, we realized there were a lot of good horses that we left out. You know, it's hard to do this thing live, but luckily, Sue Finley, our publisher, has swooped in and will pick up all the scraps that we left off. So we're going to have a fifth team, and it's going to consist of Corniche, who nobody picked as a two-year-old champion. He hasn't worked yet this year, so I think that people are a little skeptical of him making it to the starting gate, but definitely worth a flyer for Sue. So she's going to have Corniche. Major General, who I maybe should have picked because I really liked him as a two-year-old. So Major General for Todd Pletcher. Pioneer of Medina, who I believe is another Pletcher horse. And then God of Love, who's my Cupid, my boy, for Mark Cassie. And then Pinehurst, who was actually a grade one winner who we didn't pick, who won the Del Mar Futurity. He was second in the San Vicente. So we got a fifth team. Sue's got the scraps team, which probably will end up winning with the way these things go. So she got Corniche, Major General, Pioneer, Medina, God of Love, and Pinehurst. So we can throw that up there alongside the other four teams. With that, the Lane's End Stallion of the Week this week is Lexingtonian, a son of Spitestown, starting off his stud career this year with a $10,000 fee at Lane's End. The Calumet Homebred won the Grade 1 Alfred G. Vanderbilt Handicap last year for Jack Sisterson and placed in several other Grade 1 races. Loved watching Lexingtonian during his career. We'll be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Honor AP showed a lot of talent in the sense that he got over the ground really nicely with a huge stride and length of stride you can't believe. And then you look down at the stopwatch and you go, oh my gosh, he actually did that. I think Honor AP was the most talented of the three-year-old colts that I had with Giacomo, Tiago, AP Warrior. This confirmation is just perfect for a racehorse. He was one of those athletes that was just ahead of his class.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. It was announced this week that the 2021 Kentucky Thoroughbred Breeders Incentive Fund distributed funds totaling $15.9 million to the state's breeders. Last year, Kentucky breds won 315 group or graded races, which is an astounding number. The winners of 4,412 races, including 299 graded races, all received an award from the KBIF. And T.D. Thornton, our friend at the TDN, also had a story early this month talking about the purses for maiden special weight races at Keeneland and Churchill projecting upward this spring. Gatewood Bell told him that the Keeneland maiden special weights for older horses are going to be at $100,000 and then $80,000 for two-year-olds. So great news for everybody racing in Kentucky this year. It's going to be a great, great spring and summer. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled to bring on this week one of my favorite trainers, the trainer of Kentucky Derby Hopeful Classic Causeway, Brian Lynch. Thanks so much for coming on.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's good to talk to you. So let's talk about the big horse right off the bat, Classic Causeway. I thought he was super impressive in the Sam Davis, took a lot of heat, kept going in the stretch. What was your impression relative to your expectations in that race?
I thought he might have dodged a holy ball into a tougher spot once it all came out on paper, because it looked like it was a pretty competitive race and a lot of horses wanted to be forwardly placed. And that was the way I seen him running his race. But you know, when I walked into the paddock, it was a really good-looking group of three-year-olds. And then when he walked in, I thought, I'm okay. He looked great. He looked really good, and he trained so good coming into it that you know, I felt like we had the right rider. If he broke sharp, he was going to be where we wanted him to be. And you know, when Parco come and hooked him there around the top turn and they straightened for the, you know, and that 22 and change come up and they straightened for the run down the backside, and I could see his sort of body language telling me, hey, I'm cruising, I'm comfortable, this thing's hanging on to me, but I got plenty of horse. And then, you know, when we got halfway around the bottom turn, you could see them all starting to try and edge up on him, and Irad still hadn't moved a finger. So they gave me plenty of confidence that he had some horse for his run down the lane.
Hey, Brian, good morning. Thanks for joining us. If you could just expound on the idea of Tampa. You said you dodged the Holy Bull. Why did you decide to go the Sam F. Davis and now it looks like Tampa Bay Derby route to Louisville, et cetera?
Well, that was more of a timing thing, because after the Jockey Club, I gave him some time off just to, you know, let him regroup after his two-year-old year. I thought they were all legitimate races. And so we gave him a bit of a freshening, and just his work schedule up to the Holy Bull. You know, he'd worked a real good three quarters and 12 and change, but I still didn't think I'd had it. You know, I felt like he just needed that one more good 7/8 into him to have him ready off the bench. And I just didn't want to take the risk that he didn't fire in the Holy Bull, because, and with the temper, with the Sam F. Davis only a week behind it, it ended up falling into play really well.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the Giants Causeway angle and the owners as well, because as we know, he's one of the last few remaining sons of Giants Causeway from his last crop. How did you get your hands on him? And also, you know, how early did you know that he could be special?
Well, these two guys are old friends of mine, acquaintances from California, and they have a racing manager that sort of, there's a broodmare involved, obviously his mother, there's a yearling, a two-year-old behind him now, and there's a weanling, and she's back in foal. So he sort of manages them, and we were great friends because I cut my teeth out in Southern California. And so Jimmy Allard, a.k.a. Jimmy the Hat, he sort of put it all together, and I'd known these two owners for a good while prior to it. So he was out at Coolmore and went out and had a look at him, and he had a real great presence as a yearling. I mean, just had a lot of just positive energy to him. And so we sent him over to Margot, where he was broke and pre-trained, and we got nothing but positive feedbacks about him from the farm. So we sent him, brought him in to Kentucky when we brought him into Churchill when we first got back from Palmetto's last year, and just never missed a beat with him. I mean, he was just a horse that never left a note, stood up to every breeze, and got better with every work. And so he certainly sort of gave us a feel that he was a Saratoga type maiden special weight. And, you know, once we got him to Saratoga, his works just, you know, got better. The further I'd work him, the better he'd work. So, you know, he looked great breaking his maiden at Saratoga. I think running him at church at Keeneland in the futurity that day, I think it was more inexperience than anything. He sort of broke on top, and I thought that day was a game race because he had every chance to back up at the beginning of the lane where they started to hook him, and he boxed on and hung in there for third, where a lot of them that were laid up with him that day finished way behind him. And I think in the Jockey Club he'd done everything right. I mean, he rated nicely, which, and then he, you know, put himself into the race. He took the lead at the right time, and, you know, Smile Happy sort of just slingshotted by him the last part. But I really felt like he showed us that day that you know, that was enough to give him a little time now. And if he was good enough, he was going to show up as a three-year-old. And so that's where we're with him now. And as far as the Giants Causeway, I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, that was his last crop. There's only two in it, and they both look like can run. Dale's horse looks like he can run too. I think he was a little disappointing in his last start. But, you know, I was a big fan of Giants Causeway throughout his – I had a couple of good ones over the years. And so – and this group of guys, they're just such an eclectic group. I mean, it's going to be a really fun run if we can keep it going, because they're a really fun bunch of guys, and they love the game. And, boy, I think he's the horse to have some fun with.
Brian, as people can tell from your accent, you are from Down Under, from Australia. Growing up in Australia, what did you know of the Kentucky Derby?
I mean, I think everybody knows what Sports Illustrated was back then, and Kentucky Derbies were always sort of got a page over the first week of May, and you know, I grew up in a horse racing environment, so I was always very aware of just how prestigious the Kentucky Derby is. But if you ever told me I had a chance of maybe getting to run one in it one day, I'd have said, the pigs fly.
I want to ask about a couple other horses, because he's not the only big horse in your barn. You got a couple other really nice horses. I think about Gift List, who I thought was a really sweet three-year-old filly, just came back recently. Ran fourth in the Pegasus World Cup. Car Atari, who's a really, really nice turf sprinter down at Gulfstream. And a filly named Mambo Wamba, who I thought looked really, really good. First time U.S., had this explosive turn of foot under Julian Leperu at Gulfstream. What's next for those horses?
Unfortunately, Caratari was slated to run in the Gulfstream Turf Sprint this weekend, and he popped a little quarter crack, and it was a shame because he's really in good form, that horse. Where are we at with him now? I think he's 5-year-old year now. I think, you know, he could be definitely his best year. He's so big, he's so strong, and he's in such good order. So it was a setback, but it's something that we can deal with, and we'll get him back on track, and he'll be probably back for the Silk Run here before we leave here. And Gift List, I agree with you. I thought she ran a very encouraging race on Pegasus Day. I mean, she only got beat two heads for second off quite a layoff. And I think she's got a lot to look forward to. Probably bring her back in the Honey Fox next month. And so I really look for a good four-year-old campaign for her. She looks really well. We got the race back into what we needed. So the spring, summer look, you know, very enticing for her. And Mamba Wamba. Or Wamba Mamba. Yeah, she was certainly impressive that last quarter. So she runs in a little stake at Tampa this weekend and training great coming into it. So we're excited about running her and excited for her prospects for the spring summer too.
Brian, going back to your story, not for a long time, but for one period, you took over the string for Bobby Frankel in Canada. So you were his assistant trainer there. It wasn't long. I don't know how much contact you had with him, but can't be a bad thing for any trainer to learn under Bobby Frankel. What was that like and what did you learn?
Well, I'd grown up in California and trained for a lot of years out there on my own, and had sort of known Bobby for many, many years before I went to work for him. And towards me leaving the end of California, I trained for Golden Eagle Farms. And when Mr. Maybe died, Bobby said to me, hey, they're going to downsize that operation. You need to come and work for me. You know, we've got a lot of two-year-olds coming, and he really hadn't, over the years, had big numbers of two-year-olds, and I'd always had, you know, a little bit of success with them, and he'd always sort of watched me grow up around Hollywood Park, Santa Anita, and the Del Mar circuit. So, you know, I think back, that was in 2004, I think, and he talked me into coming out to Saratoga and taking a string of horses for him there. And I think I bless him every day. I think it was the best move. He exposed me to a lot of good clients, a lot of good owners, and exposed me to a lot of good horses. And Bobby, when I think back, was probably not the greatest teacher, but if you're around him a lot and you didn't learn anything, shame on you.
Yeah.
He had that sixth sense. He could change his mind two or three times walking to the track what he was going to do with the horse. And but he to me, it was all about the horse first, and it was just a great experience to, you know, be around him for so many years and see how he managed them horses and see how he brought horses along, like Joe mentioned, Mamba Wamba from Europe, and, you know, Gift List, you know, give you a good feel for how to manage them horses when they get here and how to get them to the races and how to keep them around.
Little trivia part of your history. You rode rodeo bulls when you first came to the U.S.? Is that true?
Yeah, I grew up in a sort of a rural town. There's a lot of cattle and a lot of racehorses, and I was always going to be too big for a jockey. So I'd done a lot of breaking and galloping as a kid, but, you know, always sort of got the reputation, if there was a bad one in the group, that I'd have a try to get on it. Not say that I'd usually stay on it, but and then from there I graduated into rodeo. So I got into riding bulls when I was about 16 or 17, and by the time I was 18 and 19, I got quite good at it. And if you were any good at it, the States is where you needed to come to. So
what do you remember about that? What was the competition like? Like how fierce was it out there?
Well, you know, it wasn't the PBRs like they have these days, but I was on the professional circuit, the PRCA, and it was a great era. It was the era of Lane Frost and Tuff Edelman and Jim Sharp and Ty Murray, all the future, you know, all the past champions. So it was a great era to, you know, be ride with them guys. And I used to call it the endless fiesta. We never took it as serious as probably these guys did back then, but it was a great period of my life. And you know what? I think back about it now. A lot of the fundamental things that come to managing stables and horses and livestock, I learned through just, you know, gut feelings back then about when horses are happy and when they're healthy. And I just think a lot to do if it was growing up around in a rural setting around livestock.
I had one more question. It relates to the Bobby Frankel stuff, because my favorite horse of all time is Ghost Zapper. I think you were with him during that time. What were some of the things you remember about him, and what stood out, and what made him so great?
I was with him quite a bit, especially after the Breeders' Cup when he won at Lone Star. We gave him a rest, and we brought him here to Palmetto's, and I was getting him ready for what was going to be the Oaklawn Handicap, and he ended up coming with a sinus infection, and we missed it and went to the Met Mile, and that's when he ran like them career best numbers, highest buyers, lowest rag. He was a beautiful horse to be around. He was a, you know, he, over the years, I guess you get a feel for what good horses, the characteristics, and why that, you know, you ask yourself, why is he so good? When you're around them sort of horses, they just give you that vibe. I mean, he was just a horse. He was a, when you turned around to gallop him, I mean, get tied on. He was a racehorse, and you know, even to saddle him, I know when Bobby had saddled him, he was always very nervous about him because he was a big, strong horse. He could do about anything anytime he wanted, but he was a, you know, his speed and how far he could carry it. I never forget one day when Frank Stryank had said to Bobby about the Breeders' Cup at Lone Star that, you know, maybe you should think about rating him that day and taking him back. And Bobby looked at him as if to say, are you crazy? He said, this horse is so fast, he's going to be so far in front, they're not going to see which way that horse went. And that was pretty much the way the horse was run. He ran too. But Bobby was confident enough and brash enough to be able to speak up to someone like that and tell him exactly how he felt. So. Yeah, yeah, right.
Cool stuff. Once he drew the rail, I figured he was going for sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No, he was it was again a chance of a lifetime to be around a once in a lifetime champion like he was.
Hell yeah! And you guys did an amazing job with him, obviously. Brian, thank you so much for coming on. Best of luck with Classic Causeway and the rest of the big horses this year. We really appreciate talking to you.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Enjoy the golf.
Appreciate it.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Brian Lynch will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. The XBTV workout of the week this week is Smile Happy, my top pick in this year's three-year-old fantasy draft. He worked 5 furlongs at Gulfstream Park on Saturday, went in 101.62 breezing, 6th out of 26 at the distance at Gulfstream. Obviously a very impressive horse that we're looking forward to seeing come back as a three-year-old. Son of Run Happy is currently ranked number 1 on T.D. Thornton's Derby Top 12 list. We'll see him this weekend as the headliner in the Grade 2 Risen Star Stakes at Fairgrounds. So thank you very much. We have John Sadler coming on the show. Big news about Flightline. Unfortunately, he had a slight injury over the weekend, and we'll miss the San Carlos. John, thanks for coming on to update us.
My pleasure.
So just straight up, I'm sure you've told the story before, but just for our audience, what exactly is the injury with him and how did you notice it?
Yeah, he came up a little bit off behind in his right hind. So it was apparent we weren't going to work on Sunday. We did a lot of diagnostics last week, and it appears to be a little inflammation in his right hock. So we're waiting for that. The x-rays were negative. We x-rayed him, and everything was good. Then we sent all his stuff off to the Mayo Clinic and John Hopkins and stuff like that. We're getting some feedback back on that. And, you know, what I've wanted to say all along, and I don't know if it came through in the press releases, was that this is a setback, you know, not more severe than that. You know, so he's had a little setback. Don't want to be tied to a specific timetable. Is he going to be out 2 weeks or three? We don't know exactly yet. We're going to let him come along at his own pace, and then we'll go back.
Hey, John, thanks for joining us. And I'm sure you're getting tired of these annoying questions, but we know now that he's not running in the San Carlos. I don't suppose you've circled any particular race, but what is within reason so far as a time frame when he might race again and what races might fit into that?
Yeah, well, on the timeline, the only thing we know is off the table is the San Carlos. You know, we've always said the Met Mile. That's still kind of the goal. I guess with the San Carlos off, you know, then possibly could he run at Churchill, the race we won last year with Flagstaff? Might be make some sense to go there. And then, you know, the discussion will be internally, you know, do I keep him back there and go up to New York or come home? You know, there's a lot of things to figure out. But, you know, if this horse is guilty of anything, it's being too fast.
Right.
And John, one of the things that has been interesting about Flightline is that he's really captured the imagination of the racing public. You know, we've been doing this show for 2 years, and Flightline by far has been one of the most popular horses that we've been asked about. At what point in time in his career did you see him as being that special? Because you've trained a number of Grade One winners, but was there a point in time where you were like after a breeze or after a race or when he first walked off the van? When were you like, oh my God, this horse is awesome?
Well, you know, I got one call from April Mayberry early that she said, John, I breezed that horse down here in Ocala a little bit and I got goosebumps. And I said, that's great. You know, she said the last one to give me goosebumps was Zenyatta. So I thought that was a really great. And the first time I breezed him here, I looked at Juan Leyva and I said, you know, that's the best horse you've ever ridden. And, you know, I teased him. I said, he's going to be better than Musical Romance, which was his personal favorite because he won a Breeders' Cup honor. And after he agreed. So, I mean, he's never hid his ability from us. You know, he's shown it from day one, whenever you let him do something, that he's exceptional.
You know, he's such an interesting horse. Like John said, he's captured the imagination of the racing public. Obviously, your first obligation is to the owners. But with a horse that's so popular like him, do you think of how bad people want to see him race when you think about a campaign for him?
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody wants the same thing. You know, we want to run him in the biggest races and you know, go for it all the time. But with this horse, I feel, you know, I've always felt there's kind of a stewardship, meaning my job is never to run him unless he's ready to go, you know, because he's that good. He deserves that. And if you're going to see these electrifying performances, we're going to be perfectly happy every time we take him over there. Now, it's a little disappointing we had the setback for this race, but that's what it is. And, you know, it wouldn't be a normal thing if it wasn't this horse, you know. So this horse, you know, there was people lined up to come out Sunday. And, you know, what we want to do is be transparent on what's going on and then say, you know, you'll have to wait a little bit. You're going to know there's a few things we have to figure out. And that's what we're doing.
John, well, not suggesting that you'd ever run an unsound horse, but how might you be treating this setback differently if it were just an allowance horse versus a horse of this tremendous potential and worth many millions of dollars?
Yeah, the same way. I treat all, you know, when you're racing in California, you know, the standard of care is the same for all these horses. As you well know, I get good stock and well-bred young horses. So we're very careful with all of them, you know, whether at any level, really. So I'm treating the same as I would with all of them. And then obviously the difference is that I'm on with you guys talking about them. if I had another horse in the barn that had the same thing, I think I'd only be talking to the owner.
Right. And John, last question for me, and that is, you know, with Life is Good kind of graduating from being a sprinter to now being able to go 8.5, 9 furlongs, and you look at Flightline's pedigree, and there's, you know, Tappet and Pulpit and Unbridled and Indian Charlie, Dinoformer, all horses that could go as long as the you know, as long as the race is required. Is there a point in time where you'd say, hey, maybe I'm going to try him to go a little bit further? Or are you looking at, he is such a good sprinter and kind of middle distance horse, that's where we're going to keep him?
Oh, I'm looking at the Breeders' Cup Classic. You know, it's just been, when you have a setback, then you, it's hard to go from first base to third. But we think that this horse will be better longer. I know, hard as it sounds, you know, if you look at his races and you watch him run, when he's going 108, it's not a 108 where he's slowing up. You know, he's just cruising along. So you could actually make that he'll be better at longer distances. He trains that he'd be better at longer distances. But, we're not there yet. We took one step backwards last week. But we're definitely looking to stretch him out.
Cool. All right. Well, John, thank you so much for the update. We look forward to seeing him again. And good luck with him the rest of the year.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John. Great job.
So thanks to John Sadler for coming on and updating us on Flightline. Obviously disappointing that he suffered a setback, but it sounds like he'll be back soon. I thought that was interesting that he mentioned the Churchill Downs Stakes, which is in like about 2.5 months. So we look forward to seeing him again. TDN Writers Room is sponsored by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost. Trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. West Point had a winner this past weekend with Printer's Row, who broke her maiden impressively at Turfway for Cherie DeVoe. Daughter of Street Sense is owned in partnership with LBD Stable. And this weekend, they have Sequist, whose last start was in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. She's making her 3-year-old debut at Fairgrounds for Dallas Stewart, so we look forward to that. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. Legacy wrapped up their breeding stock season this month at the Facic Tipton Winter Mixed Sale. We look forward to seeing them in just a few months when the yearling sales start up. Legacy Bloodstock sales graduates include 104 black type winners and earners of over $136 million. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland Spring Meet runs from April 8th through April 29th. Tickets are available on sale now at tickets.keeneland.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Brian Lynch, as well as John Sadler, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching, and go watch better things. See you next time.